Thank you, Don. So a little bit of snow on the ground looks a little bit like Christmas time, which is nice news for those of you with the $1,000 Canada Goose jackets. You can now turn to the people around you and say, see, it was worth it.
Those are the unofficial winter uniforms now of Chicago, it looks like, doesn't it?
I have only noticed it this year. I was talking to Griffin about this recently, and he's seen the red patches on sleeves more than I have in years past, the last two or three. But this year, literally, there was one day I was walking downtown, and I thought, oh, there must be a convention for alpine rescuers or something, because I hadn't noticed these, you know, really warm, expensive-looking jackets with no more than a little red patch that says Canada Goose on the left shoulder. And I thought, well, that emblem must be a team or an organization. No, it's $1,000 is what it means. It means I have $1,000 for a coat that you could have got at Target for $125.
Mm-hmm.
And they're beautiful, and I want one. But I also don't want one. I don't want one. It's this sort of conspicuous consumption, the Canada Goose product line right now, that is making me feel like, and then I'm trying to think of what. What are some other instances where everybody had to have the thing? And you know what they have is a label. There's plenty of warm coats out there. There's plenty of coats that are as functional as a Canada Goose coat. But Kate Upton wasn't wearing the Target coat on the cover of Sports Illustrated a couple of years ago, was she? No. You don't see it on TV shows. No, it's the brand. It's that little red dot. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go into the business of making those little red labels.
Yeah.
I'll go to jail for this, but I'm telling you, I think I could make some money.
Slap the patch on any old coat, and there you go.
It's not the most novel idea as you are presenting. You know, people, it's like it is now your dream to become one of those guys that sells, you know,
knockoffs,
Prado bags on the street or whatever.
Right. I'm going to be.
It's been done before.
Fourth Nace.
There is some precedent for this kind of endeavor. Yeah.
I like how Don said the unofficial outfit of Chicago winters, because just last year, my friend who I met, he's from Wisconsin. He went to Wisconsin, and he said when he was in college, he remembers anytime you saw somebody with a North Face. Guy or girl, North Face, the girls had UGG boots, the guys would wear hats.
This is true.
You knew they were from Chicago. And I was like, wow, I can't believe an outsider is making that generalization, because you are so right. You are just so correct.
It's true. It's funny how this is just me, but I feel like the waves come and go. Like now I would feel, as you say, conspicuous wearing a Canada Goose jacket. Like, oh, this is like
you're a joiner.
The thing right now everybody has. But I just got a new North Face coat, and like two, three, I don't know, five, 6 years ago, I don't know how many years, but
that grew pretty quickly. Oh,
yeah. A while ago, I would have felt like, oh, I don't want to have a North Face coat because that's the thing, right? And that's kind of embarrassing. But now I don't feel that way as much because it's this new other thing.
Yeah,
I
just have to wait for it to cycle out.
Right.
Yeah, get it then. And by the way, the price might go down. I was reading online today. They say the Canada Goose jackets in the spring might be as much as 50% discounted.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. I do not believe that. But maybe the price will come off when the weather gets warmer. I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah.
I thought that North Face was sort of the jacket of youth. That was the college kids. That was the 20-somethings. Maybe it was the Chicago youth movement.
Especially the fleece.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Those were everywhere.
I think because it's lightweight, it's a little sporty, it definitely gets the job done.
That made sense. But what did a North Face jacket cost? I mean, even though that was trendy, I don't know. This thing about...
It wasn't $1,000. I mean, even the fleece jacket must have been like $200 or less, I'm thinking.
Well, I spent some time today on the Canada Goose site, and turns out the jacket I like, the Snow Mantra Parka in red, is $1,500.
Whoa.
I've bought cars for less than that.
Yeah, man.
And they're still on the road. I mean, you can drive a car for that amount of money.
Yeah. And for the record, when I first started seeing the Canada Goose like jackets and patches a couple of years ago, I thought they were CTA patches, and I sometimes still continue to think that. I'm like, wow, look at those well-dressed CTA workers.
Excuse me, sir, how do I get to Clark and Adams?
Do I want the red or the brown line? What am I doing?
I think a $1,500 coat will definitely keep you warmer than a $1,500 car.
Like, that's what I was going to say.
You're better off spending the night outside in that coat than in that car, probably.
Well, I, you know, you talk about expensive hats. So I just thought, let me just get a baseball cap. They sell a baseball cap. The baseball cap is $95.
Oh, my goodness.
Jeez. The infants, well, 2 to 7. So small child knit cap is $85. That's conspicuous consumption. And I'm not against it. Like, if you have the money and you want to do it and you want to put up with the eye rolls of other people, well, then, you know, too bad for us, right? So, and I'm sure you've already dealt with that. Maybe you drive a BMW. You've already managed this emotion. I've driven a BMW before. I have a Tissot watch, which isn't a Rolex, but I like it in part because I think, oh, there's less expensive watches, but that's a few $100 watch, and it's kind of cool. So I'm not above that. But there's just something about the price of these jackets relative to the utility that make me roll my eyes. So if you Google Canada Goose News, do you know what comes up? What would you guess the kind of story is?
Something about geese poop.
No, I'm still talking about jackets, not geese poop.
Well, just Canada geese, I was thinking.
No, well, it's about schools essentially banning them because it either creates, you know, an envy for the other kids or they get ripped off. It's just too much effort.
Wow.
So there's some schools that are banning the Canada Goose jackets, which must really frustrate the parent. I mean, I just spent, say, $700 for the parka for my kid.
And now we can only wear it in home.
Yeah,
and the school won't let him wear it because it's too upsetting to the other students. I don't know that I would make that call if I were the principal, but that's happened. The cargo bay coat is $1,500. The men's shearling aviator hat, the men's hat with the ear flaps, $325. You know, I think there's something smart about pricing an item that expensively. If you do sell it for what you probably could, say, $400, you could make a little bit of money, but you might not have the demand. You put $1,400 on it, and by God, people want that. They really want that. I think there have been studies in economics where beers will do this. A beer that you can get for a six-pack for $6, yeah, you'll sell. But if you price that at $12, people go, oh, that's a 12. You want that? What do you want, the $6 beer or the $12 beer? It's the same beer. You want the $12 beer.
Didn't Pei Le Chew company just do a commercial where they acted like this was this brand new retail?
Yes, yeah. I saw that. Finish the thought, Joe.
I forget what it was, but basically a high-end shoe store, and they started questioning the people on, you know, why they purchased this and how extravagant the shoe seems to be, and it turns out it was like a $12 shoe.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, wow! But in the back of their mind, they're like, well, now I don't want the shoe. I so do not want the shoe that a moment ago I really wanted. It's 10:21. Here's one of the things we did during the holidays. We had friends in from out of town. When friends come in from out of town, now you are a tourist. A couple of highlights from the city of Chicago in a minute. My friend Gary Kranak is on the phone. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hello?
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Yeah, who is this?
This is funny because whenever I call my friend Gary, who is visiting from out of town, he's a Minnesotan, whenever I call him just to say hi or make plans, the first thing he says is, am I on the radio? Is this, are we on the air? Hello? Hello, everybody.
So you got it. You thought that was, see, I was, Griffin would appreciate that joke because his last night he was talking about the Seinfeld episode where Kramer will call with some horrible situation that he's in and Jerry will say, who is this? So I thought, so anyway, that was my attempt at replicating the Seinfeld bit. How are you, John?
So what was your favorite? Good, Gary. What was so you were in Chicago with your family, Peg and Grace and Sam were with you. Sam is my godson. We're all great pals. And every now and then you guys come to Chicago from Minnesota. It was good to see you. You know, what was nice, I don't know if you heard me mention this earlier, was that when someone visits from out of town, then you become a tourist, too. I hadn't been to the Art Institute in a long time. Thank you for taking us there.
John, it was great. And I think speak for Peggy as well. Because if you were to ask what was the best part of being in Chicago, first of all, it was the time that we got to spend with each other as a family.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
Our two two of our kids along with us, and which we don't get to do very much, and we get to spend time with them, and that's number one, family time. And then seeing you guys, definitely, because we don't get to do that, obviously, hardly at all anymore. And visiting with our friend Nancy, too, one night. So that those were all the things that, because, you know, I grew up in Illinois, I love Chicago, I visited it often, and always have a good time, but it's always so much better when you're with family and friends.
We get a little energized. Go ahead, Gary, keep going.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love, and the museum was definitely one of the highlights. And, you know, we came at this particular time because both the Timberwolves and the Wild were in town, and fortunately we chose the correct game to go to, that being the Timberwolves game.
Yeah, we were all at the Timberwolves-Bulls game the night after Christmas, which was just about as good two bad teams, but it was perfect because, A, the Bulls fans got to see a home Bulls game, and, B, they got to see Derrick Rose from the Timberwolves come and play. Taj Gibson's on the Timberwolves as well. So at any given point, there were seven guys on the floor, maybe eight, that the whole arena was rooting for. You don't always have that.
And I think there was more enthusiasm for the Wolves that I've seen at many Wolves games.
Yeah, no kidding. Frankly. I mean, they were getting cheers. And how nice a moment was it when it must have been the fourth quarter? Derrick Rose gets his 22nd, 23rd point. He makes a shot, and the crowd starts chanting.
MVP.
Yeah, the Bulls are chanting MVP for D. Rose. I was really glad to see that.
I think it's safe to say that's probably never happened before, where a team chants or crowd chants MVP for a team or somebody on the opposing team. That was very cool.
Yeah. Among the highlights of your visit here. For me, a trip to Ann Sather's. That's the place you got to go for breakfast in Chicago.
Yep. That was definitely, and we, you know, we were just talking about it this morning. We didn't really eat out that much while we were here, which was fine. But Ann Sather's is always a good place to go. And, you know, this was a really good time to come, too. It didn't seem, you know, it was crowded in some places, but not so much in others. I think a lot of people probably were out of town visiting other places. Yeah. But, like, at Sather's, I expected there to be a big crowd there. There wasn't. We got in and out. That was fine. The museum was busy, but it always is.
One other thing, Gary, I got to go. I need to wrap this conversation up. But you guys did something that I think would be beneficial to our listeners, and that is if you want to do a stay in the city, you can do an Airbnb, you can do a hotel to stay with friends, whatever. But you guys stayed in, is that technically an Airbnb that you were in?
Was it a VRBO or an Airbnb?
VRBO.
It was actually a VRBO, but same diff, I think.
So right by the Zachary Hotel in Wrigley Field, well, actually, very near there, but it was above the Aurelios, or by the Aurelios on Clark Street, the new one. You guys got a three-bedroom, two-bath apartment for how many dollars a night?
It was about $150 a night with all the taxes and fees and such. So
that's a great way to do the city. I mean, you were right by the red line.
It was great.
Good for you. Props to you guys for figuring that out.
Yeah, we've done that before. We stayed in Bucktown, I think, the last time we were in town, and did something very similar. Had the upper half of a townhome or a duplex, whatever you want to call it, and similarly priced. I mean, it's great.
Yeah,
it was terrific. Hey, let me chime in with one thing regarding Canada Goose, if I can.
All right, go.
Because you were talking about that a minute ago. Okay, real quick, this ties in with a conversation we were having last night. Where do you suppose the Canada Goose coats are made?
I think I know the answer to this. I think they're made in Canada.
I would certainly hope so, but... if that's true, that would justify to some degree perhaps the expenses of the coats versus if they were made, you know, in China, for example. However, I would not be surprised at all if they were made in China, and maybe somebody there could check that
out. Google that up for us. I'm hanging up on you now, Gary.
Thanks for calling.
Good to hear you.
And thanks again for having us. Love you.
Safe travels to a friend of ours. It's 10:32. Shame on me. Don, I want to hear the news. We'll do that next on WGN.
525,600 minutes.
Seems appropriate.
525,000 moments, oh dear.
Dated maybe, but appropriate.
600 minutes. How do you measure a year? In daylights, in sunsets, in midnights, in cups of coffee, in inches, in miles, in laughter, in strife. In 525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year in the life?
Bring into those 525,000th or whatever that was minute of the year as we look back on 2018. I hope that was a good year for you. Boy, I listened to that song again today, just kind of grabbing a little of that audio. I love that song. What a fun song.
Classic.
What a great song.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a depressing show, but good song.
All right, Griffin, what?
Nothing. No, it's a wonderful song.
There's a laugh. there's a sort of...
Bring us all back to earth, Griff.
You know.
Oh, here we go. There's some nuanced commentary.
I genuinely like that song, too. Is it corny? Absolutely. But you're allowed to like corny things, and I like that song, too. Yeah.
I don't even know that it's corny.
Oh, come on.
We'll talk amongst ourselves here. Hey, Joe, there's nothing corny about saying, wouldn't it be nice if we measured a year in love? Isn't there a campaign right now to make Twitter nice again? Wouldn't it be nice if instead of we...
How's that campaign coming about?
Yeah, I don't know if that's...
I was wondering if it was ever nice, honestly.
I don't know if that's ever going to be able to be fixed.
I hate you guys right now. I'm playing Seasons of Love, and I'm having to defend that. Wow.
They're really going to have to start over, I think, with a new Twitter if they want it to be nice.
This is not about Twitter. This is about love.
I'm sorry. I genuinely apologize. I'm going to see Into the Woods tonight, actually, in Evanston. So, I don't know.
Wait, the original? The Into the Woods movie?
No. There's a production.
Show.
Oh, nice. I'm sorry. I missed the venue.
At Musical Theater Works. I think it's the Kahn Auditorium in Evanston. So, I don't want to hear about another musical. That's why I'm being so mean. I'm trying to give myself a reason for being totally mean to you.
Yeah, no, that had nothing to do with your snark, but I'll let it go. I'll let it go. You know, I don't know, what was the hit at your house this year, Joe or Don or Griff? What was the thing that, it could be a moment or a gift? I'm thinking more merchandise, to be honest with you. Was there something under the tree that you gave or got that was really fun this year for you guys? Nothing comes to mind? How about you, Joe Brand?
Yeah,
a new football, maybe? Some athletic socks?
Yeah, I got a lot of socks this year. I will say that.
Just trying to think of sporty things for you. My dad got an iWatch for Christmas. My dad's 90 years old, so there was considerable discussion among the kids about will they be compatible, my dad and the iWatch. And I talked to the guy at the store when I bought it. Those people at the Apple store are so smart and almost always so helpful. But he said, well, he can come in for one of the tutorial sessions where on the big screen we walk people through how to do things with their products. And I didn't think that would be a very good fit. What needs to happen, and I don't know if this does, somebody needs to make house calls. Does Apple have, you know, like a geek squad where they say, they could charge $50, $7,500 an hour, I'll bet. I mean, they're already charging you a lot for the product anyway. It's sort of like giving people a spaceship and saying, all right, here's the keys. There's the door. They just stick it in the ignition, give or return, and you're good to go. And you're like, okay, but I do have a rocket ship here. Do you know how to drive a Toyota? Yeah, okay, you're good to go.
All they know how to do is make coffee in the rocket ship rather than all the other attributes it could do.
And there's Houston going, we need science. Did you communicate with the aliens? No. No, but I got an espresso out of this thing.
I'm curious about this. They have a Apple Consultants Network. I don't know if they come to you, though. Says,
think about how much. Go ahead, Griff.
Customize assistance for your home, school, or business.
Customize assistance for your home, school, or business.
But that I don't know if they come to your home, school, or business.
I was going to say, don't they have like courses around at local places, something like that?
Literally, I think you need to go where the product is being used, in the person's home, at their desk, in their lap, where they're comfortable, and walk them through it. I mean, because how many times has this happened to you? Or at a Genius Bar or whatever, and they go, well, here's why you can't text message with your Mac Pro anymore. Because you need to update the software, but you need to download the pictures to a third place and then reload them and then reboot the software. And it makes perfect sense. You get home, you have no chance of doing that. But if somebody would come to your home and do it for you or help you do it, I would pay $100 for that service. I would pay $100 for somebody to do that for my dad.
How did your dad like the Apple Watch?
He really likes it because it shows his heart rate.
Again, you use this wonderful mechanism for one aspect.
I know.
I love it.
Well, he is voice to texting. I mean, this is a 90-year-old man, and I'm getting these text messages. John, do you read me? Literally. I go, yes, Dad. It's working. Message received. Okay. So he's, you know, that's maybe part of the joy of it is figuring out how to run the spaceship. But isn't there a company or a service? If you went to a Dell Web community and pulled in with a white van, you wouldn't even need hardware. You could pull in a bicycle and just go to doors and go, hi, you got a problem with your thing? And they would give you $75. Don't you think there's a money-making venture that I just invented there? Deborah, this is John. You're on WGN. How are you, Deborah?
Hi, good morning.
Hey.
Just listening to your program.
Sure, thank you.
I just want to let you know, most public libraries are happy to demonstrate tech products with people. There's always a rush after the holidays. In fact, my library, Arlington Heights Memorial Library, had special days designated just for this. You know, learn how to use your holiday gift.
What a good idea.
They don't come out to the house. I was just telling your colleague I spoke with first, I can remember sitting in a staff meeting talking about the possibility of my coworkers going out in the community. I don't work there anymore. I retired. So who knows if that's on the horizon. But, you know, it's like liability, going into people's house, insurance, all those things. But if someone can come to the library with their gadget, their iPad, whatever, happy to do it. And it's not only Apple products.
Oh, yeah, right.
Free.
Yeah, and so check your local library and see if they're doing what they do in Arlington, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
What a great call. Deborah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That's a good idea. But I'm telling you what, like when they're selling you the insurance, when you make the, you know, you just bought a $400 or a $600 thing, and they say, well, for you, and you hate to do that, but you do. And then they go, you probably should give us $100 more in case it breaks. And then you think, well, you know, what kind of fool does or doesn't do this? It seems like you're damned either way.
Well, I think it's such a win that you can get your father, a 90-year-old man, an Apple Watch, and he utilizes it and actually appreciates it. We bought my grandpa a fax machine back when those were in the day, and he opened it up, looked at it, and said, I think I got someone else's gift. So no more technologically advanced gifts for grandpa after that.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right, Joe. A, lucky that my dad at 90 is upright and, you know, taking fluids. And then B, that he's able to appreciate it and work with it and wants it. You know, I mean, that's all good. But I hear again, I just think the possibilities of this thing are limitless. And he's going to use a fraction of it. And it would be so helpful. And so profitable for somebody to do a door-to-door business. I'm glad to hear some libraries are doing something like that. It's 1050. 312-981-7200 is the phone number to call or text. By the way, I have a couple questions about the football games today. Big day on the college football scene. And Northwestern plays on New Year's Eve. That'll be a fun game against Utah. Joe, run down a couple of these with me in a minute on WGN. Joe Brand's in WGN Radio Sports. And also on a phone line is our friend Sam Panionovich. Used to work at this little radio station of ours. You now hear him on Sirius XM. I think Channel 204, the host of Vizen, is that what you call it, my friend?
You don't know this by now. I've been here almost a year, man.
Hey, I'm wearing your T-shirt underneath my sweatshirt right now. So I'm still a fan, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing good, King John. Good to hear from you.
Okay, so we've got Clemson and Notre Dame today. That's your Cotton Bowl, 3 o'clock local kickoff. Clemson is favored in this game, though both teams are undefeated. Am I right about that, guys?
Yes, sir. Yeah, both teams didn't really have the greatest schedule. They're both undefeated, but the big knock on both teams is that the big slate, you know, their schedule wasn't really that strong. But, hey, guess what? You only play who's in front of you. And Las Vegas is saying that Clemson is about 11 or 11.5 points better than Notre Dame. I think that's a big number. I think Notre Dame's really talented, King. And I think you got a lot of guys in that area, a lot of guys and gals that are big Domer fans. They have a quarterback that's really good, Ian Book, who makes winning plays, doesn't turn the football over. He was really good late in the season. And Brian Kelly's a pretty good coach. I think this one's going to be a close game. In fact, I think Notre Dame's going to hang around, and they have a small chance to win the game. But I think 11 is a lot of points to lay with Clemson.
This is the difference between you and me. I mean, you're talking about point spreads because that's what you do. That's what you guys do over at Sirius. You not only talk about the games, but you talk about the odds. You're in Las Vegas. I just want to know who's going to win the game. Joe, who's going to win the game?
Well, just as Sam said, you look at both teams and they're both undefeated. No, it can't be all that black and white. I mean, Sam is coming from the vantage point of where you're going to make money from. And, you know, what he's saying is what I've heard a lot of the experts have been saying, too. The other thing is, you know, the past few weeks, all Notre Dame has heard about is, well, you know, how you're going to stop Clemson's offense and how you're going to go against how much they throw the ball. So, I mean, they've got all this time to kind of build up this whole momentum of being the underdog. So a lot of people are giving Notre Dame a better fighting chance than what other people are leading to believe.
To cover the spread, maybe, that is 12 or 11 points. But you, Sam, at the end of the day, do you think Notre Dame can win this game?
They can win. I'd say it's about a 25-30% chance. Now, Clemson's best defensive lineman. Yeah, Clemson's, well, here, Clemson's best defensive lineman just got popped for putting illegal substances in his body. So him being out's a big deal. Clemson has more talent, but in a one-shot college football game, anything can happen. I think the Irish hang around. Let's put it that way.
Alabama going to beat Oklahoma, guys?
Yeah, I'd be stunned if they lose this game. Vegas has a point total on Alabama. You can actually bet over under this total, the number X. 45.5, King John. That's the total for Alabama alone in the game.
That's funny.
So Vegas thinks Alabama's going to name their score.
Every time Northwestern comes into a game as an underdog, they win. More or less, it seems. They haven't been given much credit this season. Do you think Northwestern's going to beat Utah, Sam?
I do, actually. I think this is a game that Papacheri wins. Now, I love to go against them when they're facing a team like Ohio State or Michigan or Notre Dame because, let's be honest, I mean, Northwestern, they're well-coached, they're well-prepared, but sometimes they're just outclassed in talent. I mean, they don't have the players and the recruits that these bigger programs have, but they can beat Utah. There's no reason they can't. Utah's on their backup quarterback, their backup running back, and I do love the Cats in an underdog role. This is a bowl game Northwestern could win. Remember, Fitz has won his last couple bowl games in Evanston, the Pinstripe Bowl, the Music City Bowl. They have a chance to win this game because they're not going to be out-talented by Utah.
You on that page too, Joe?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Northwestern, as Sam said, has won their most recent couple of bowl games. Just basically the way they've gone out in the regular season and, you know, didn't really go down without a strong fight against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game as well. So the way that their season has progressed since starting 1-3, they've just shown so much improvement. I think I got to hop on that.
You know, my own opinion is that with the team's 14-0 road win over Iowa, the Wildcats clinched the Big Ten West Division title to match up with Ohio State in the conference championship game, and I felt the Wildcats hung tough in that one, but Ohio State was too much to handle. That's my thought.
Yeah, too much talent. That's just what it comes down to. I mean, Ohio State's got five-star players on both sides of the field, and Northwestern is building that level, but it's just not a fair fight when you get to a neutral field against a much better team. That's just the reality of it.
Did that sound like I was reading it from Yahoo.com, by the way, or did that sound like that was just me? Because I'm trying to come across as a guy who knows what he's talking about.
As long as you're wearing purple and you meow, you can nail it. Just whatever you want. Just do like what Mike Greenberg and Seth Meyers and Mike Wilbon, they all come out of the shadows when Northwestern's good. It's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, so you on TV later today, or is that serious?
Yeah, 11-1 Pacific. We're doing a lot of coverage for the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, and it's going to be a good time. By the way, whenever you get out here, I'm going to teach you how to play Baccarat. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay. That's not the one where you count to points, and if your cards total 21, you win. That's not that one.
Come on. Sam's a decent host, too. The good thing is he'll show you the sides of Vegas that you don't really expect. Not a weird, crazy, eerie side, but he's got some local joints and one of the best steak dinners you could ever buy.
All right, time's up. Come see us when you're in the studio sometime, Sam.
All right, boys. Take care.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Sam Panionovich. Thank you, Dom. This is John Williams. It's 11:13 on WGN Radio. The Mincing Rascals is a podcast we record at the studios here at WGN Radio. It was judged this year to be the number one podcast in the city. So it's Eric Zorn this week, the Chicago Tribune columnist, and Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist. The rest of our friends at WGN Radio, including Steve Bertrand from the newsroom, were not able to attend our holiday recording, but three of us gathered in the studio Thursday and kicked around a few items. The first voice you hear in our partial podcast broadcast today is Eric Zorn. Eric, online in the Chicago Tribune, asked readers about 40 different questions for his annual predictions column. We sort of boiled it down to a smaller list.
Let's use your list because it's boiled down.
Well, it's 40 of them. Let's start now.
I have 40 questions. But well, some of them are sort of small. I admit, like, you know, is Pat Fitzgerald going to stay at Northwestern as a football coach?
I think he will.
That's not, yeah, well, yeah. I do too. Yeah,
although he could coach anywhere. He could coach in the NFL. He could coach in the SEC if he wanted. But yeah, I think he'll stay.
In arena football, do they still have that? He could coach there. No, I think
the XFL is rebooting.
I think the Packers are going to go after him. I think some other pro teams may go after him. Some other colleges may go after him. He's a very good football coach.
No, he's a good man. He's a good coach.
But he bleeds purple, I believe, is the expression.
I think that's it. Great graduation rate. In fact, I think the Northwestern Wildcat football program has the highest graduation rate in college football.
Hard not to be a fan of that program, and yet I am not.
Why? Because you're a Michigan guy?
Michigan guy. Yeah. So.
Will Donald Trump be in office this day next year?
Yes. Yeah, I think he will be. Mm-hmm. I think there's a relatively decent chance that he won't be running for re-election.
Yeah,
but I think
really. Here's the thing. I mean, they've already merged the Trump victory 2020 with the RNC.
Point you made last week.
Yeah, and well, to me that's jaw dropping. So the
incumbents' campaign merges with the RNC.
Yeah, there's always been overlap, of course, but they've always had separate entities, and this just tells you the Republicans are all in on this guy.
That is interesting. I mean, if you do think about it, it's kind of a bellwether, because think of all of the things that could go wrong between now and, I don't know, when the campaign really gets up and running, and yet they are, as Scott says, the same entity.
There was a very good column in the Tribune in the last couple of days, an op-ed, and I'm sorry, I don't know the days because I see so much online and so on, but it basically talked about how Trump's support is going to be eroding over the course of this year. This support of his, which is not that robust as it is going to start eroding, and then there's going to be some turning point, the writer thinks, where Republicans are going to say that hitching our wagon to this guy is not politically advantageous, and then you may really see an erosion of his support in Washington. I mean, right now, the idea of impeaching him, which I don't think is going to happen, is really unthinkable, because it would just be this performative political act, the same way that the Republicans impeached Bill Clinton, even though there was no chance they were going to remove him from office. I think that the Democrats have learned from that would be a silly thing to do.
Let's make that the next question then, okay. Because I, like you guys, think he will be president this day next year. I, like you, Eric, don't know that he will run for re-election, which it would be hard to imagine, wouldn't it?
And yes. He could probably get a doctor to make up some excuse for him that he couldn't run again.
The same guy. Which, by the way, it was him. Okay, but then you neither think nor will predict that the House is going to impeach him. Is that correct?
I think there's going to be a lot of talk like that, but I can't imagine that unless something new pops up.
And Scott, would it be a bad idea for Democrats strategically to do that?
Because the process is long. If it begins in 2019 at any point, this drags into 2020. Now, all of a sudden, the 2020 election becomes a referendum. Do we impeach this guy or not? Does that make sense? So,
yeah, no, it totally makes sense, and I think that Democrats will see it. What's the old saying? If you're going to aim for the king, you got to kill the king. And if the Democrats realize they don't have the support in the Senate to actually remove him from office, then impeachment becomes this act of futility that you end up losing. You end up looking like losers.
Trump needs a target. He needs somebody to fight in order to justify his existence. He's always fighting or pushing back on somebody. Yeah. This is something Nancy Pelosi needs to pay attention to. They need to really, you know, they've sort of got him or the Republicans on their heels, but they need to not pile on, isn't maybe the best way to put it, but they need to be strategic about how they treat him.
And he's going to run in 2020 as he's going to point to the Democrats as being, they're the ones who won't give me the wall. They're the ones that want all these horrible, awful, disease-ridden, corrupt immigrants in your country and are taking your jobs. And
well, since you bring up the wall that John thinks we should give to Trump as a, well, not a Christmas present anymore, but maybe a New Year's gift or for Valentine's Day.
It's right around the corner.
Give him his wall. It seems to me that he is losing that argument, and the Democrats sense that he's losing his
argument.
Haven't
they come down on the Republican side? Aren't they at 2.6 they say they'll take? If hasn't the president agreed to 2.6 as opposed to 5?
But he wants to spend it on a wall. I think the Democrats are willing even to go higher than that as long as the money doesn't go toward a wall. If it goes toward other border security methods.
So it comes down to one word, right?
Oh,
one four-letter word,
and
wall.
One thing Trump said yesterday when his trip to a trip overseas, where he said that they're not giving me a wall because I want a wall, and in some ways that's true. In some ways, he has built up the symbolism of this wall to such a degree that to give him his wall is to capitulate to him.
That's the thing he never gets. This is the point I make every week. Of course, they're not going to give you the wall because they don't like you. I'll be transparent about it. Even if the wall were a good idea, it would be a tough sell. It's not guaranteed it's a good idea anyway, but he's made it so much more difficult for Democrats to meet him, even at 2.6, when they're at 1.6 themselves. I mean, it's $1 billion amongst friends, for crying out. It's just $1 billion. No, but I mean, that's nothing.
No, no, you're right.
That's nothing on a federal budget.
That's what he, it is all about the symbolism right now. It's about the symbolism. Are we capitulating? Are the Democrats capitulating?
And so should they just say, oh, what the hell? I have family members who aren't getting paid this week, right? Should they just go ahead and give him the wall and be done with it?
This is a staring contest right now between the Democrats and Trump. Who's going to blink first?
We have become such a wussy country, and even our shutdowns, I mean, less than 25% or less of the government. Back in my day, when Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich shut down the government, it shut it down, man. It was shut down.
They call this a partial government shutdown.
Which is, it's just sort of like, it reminds me of what happened with Rauner here with the budget stuff. That's just sort of,
budget kept going on continuing resolutions, which was worse than having an actual budget in Illinois.
So why not have a real shutdown? I mean, and have real pain, and then we can actually have a real discussion. But we don't. Yep. We won't. And so.
They had that NORAD thing following Santa Claus on Christmas Eve.
When the president tell a 7-year-old, you believe in Santa Claus? That's marginal.
This is marginal.
Marginal.
Christmas. There's a 7-year-old on the other end of a phone line. I think it was a little girl.
Yeah.
You can just imagine how perplexed she must have been. A, she's not sure what marginal means, maybe, or its application in this case. And if what he's really doing is winking, going, you know, what is and isn't the truth about this? Those are hard calls to make. I think that is literally, I think that's one of the trappings of the presidency, that you've got to do this. It's for public consumption. You don't know this kid. Kids are funny on the phone.
It's not a hard call. A hard call is when you're calling the family of a fallen serviceman. That's a hard call. This is easy. This ought to be 101 for a president.
Yeah, this is.
Are we gonna see his tax returns this year?
God, no.
Eric, that was one of the questions you posted.
I think we are.
I just don't know that settling scores or demonstrating your animus, which is already apparent, is all that valuable right now.
But that's the cycle we're in. It's childish. It's unproductive. But we're facing.
And Eric endorses that tit for tat.
Yeah, he does. I know.
And that makes. And
I'm right here. To act like this, there's nothing. Like this is just we're looking like, oh look, he wrote off his own. Didn't the Clintons write off their underwear? Didn't we find that out?
Yeah, they donated their underwear. Yes.
They donated old underwear. We're not looking. I don't think they're looking for things like that. I think they are looking for some serious financial malfeasance on the part of Trump. And I think that's why these tax returns are going to be interesting. We're going to see bolster what was in those New York Times reports about what a fraudulent, skeezy, sleazy businessman he is. And that is actually kind of important. This isn't like, yeah. Oh, look, he wrote off his underpants. So.
You know, it's funny. If Bertrand were here, I think, you know, if you guys never made it, I could do this podcast because I know some of your parts. But Steve would say, crimes are crimes. It's important. If that were Obama or Bush or Clinton or any previous president and we had any one of these, we would say, oh, my God, this is a really serious breach. And yet because it happens every single day with this presidency, we don't take them at the face value they deserve.
Well, then it becomes a question of legislation. And do we pass a law that says if you run for president, you have to release your tax returns?
I'd go for that.
I'd be down with that, too, frankly. But
well, let's segue to state politics for a minute then and city politics. Because you also asked about Ed Burke, and I don't know what the most important question is for Ed Burke, like will he be indicted or will he go to jail or do we even know what the crime is? It seems to me like it's probably some sort of overlap of his public and private business.
Yes, yes. No, NPR did a great question. NPR in partnership with ProPublica?
BGA.
BGA. And they did. They looked at his voting record and in his relationships, and it's pretty damning.
Because where he recuses himself, the Better Government Association and BEZ said, where he'll recuse himself from votes, he'll declare Article 14 and say, I'm not going to vote on this because I have a perceived conflict of interest. He chairs the committees that, you know, navigate these things through City Hall anyway. His stamp is on it. So his vote isn't always the most important thing, the process being either clients of his or business of the city. And as the chair of the finance committee, he can really manipulate things to his client's advantage.
You know, I didn't ask about Burke. I did ask whether he's going to be indicted, and I think the answer is yes. I think he will be. Just if you're just looking at the tea leaves. The other question is he going to win his race for re-election? I could see him losing that race.
I don't know his district that well. But it just seems to me like the guys that have the levers of power are able to transcend demographics.
Oh, they have. I just see him as having a lock on that district. And if he does what Madigan does in his district, which is just remarkable constituent services that gold standard stuff. You're not gonna lose re-election.
Gold standard stuff. That's kind of interesting. I mean, you make it sound virtuous.
I think it's brilliant. We had dinner recently with a couple we met recently, and they live in a Madigan's district. And things like every month, someone comes to your door and knocks and says, "Hey, everything okay? How are things going here?" And they said, "Well, yeah. Do you know a tree removal service? Because we're looking at this tree in our front yard." They had no idea with it. They just assumed this guy had could help them find somebody. The next morning they wake up and they're hearing, and someone is there with a Madigan on the side of the truck.
Really?
Cutting down their tree. Their alley is plowed. Their trash is picked. I mean, it just...
Right. So that's virtuous stuff, unless it comes at the expense of other neighborhoods or other resources. And if there is sort of a quid pro quo down the line with somebody, I think all of these guys are at least a little stinky. And I think the longer you're there, the stinkier you get. Too bad, but I think absolute power or long-term power corrupts absolutely. I don't think anybody should be in the city council for 50 years. Nobody should do anything for 50 years.
You know, I have this long-standing philosophical objection to...
I know this. I could do your part on this, too.
So I didn't even really need to be here for this this question. I'm really in favor of leadership position journalists. I don't think someone should be committee chair or party leader or Speaker of the House, President of the Senate. I think those terms should be severely limited.
Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Scott Stantis. That's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. We broadcast part of it on Saturdays. By the way, I looked up the graduation rate for college athletics. Now, a note on that, just to finish Eric's point in a minute on WGN. Thank you, Mr. Hochberg. It says here, this is from Northwestern last month. They put out a notice. The NCAA has something called the graduation success rate, the GSR. This is from the NCAA. And Northwestern turned into 98% overall graduation success rate, tied for the highest mark among all football bowl subdivision institutions. They lead the Big Ten by 5 percentage points. Northwestern's 98 GSR matches the all-time record and the highest by a Big Ten athletic department in 14 years. The 99% for the football program is the top score among all institutions across the nation. 12 Wildcat programs posted perfect graduation rates. Lacrosse, baseball, cross country, volleyball, men's and women's golf, men's and women's soccer, men's and women's tennis, women's swimming, diving, and fencing. Lacrosse is in that list too. 6 varsity programs scored 92% or better. So, yeah, that's a shout-out to Northwestern and to Coach Fitzgerald. Eric Zorn was asking, do you think he's going to stick around? And we're all saying yes. We're all sure hoping yes. The news is coming up on WGN. This is John Williams, and we usually on Saturday mornings about this time ask producer Griffin to introduce us to a little bit of music. Tell us about it. We'll rate it on a scale of 1 to 100. What are we listening to there, Griff?
That was singer-songwriter Mitski. Her name's Mitski. The song was called Nobody from her album Be the Cowboy.
I thought that was pretty good.
It came out last year. That was rated number one album of the year on Pitchfork.
Oh, no kidding. Really?
Yeah.
Mitski, number one album of the year on Pitchfork.
Be the Cowboy by
Be
Mitski.
Be the Cowboy. Be the Cowboy.
Yes.
The Does song. It all sound like that? Is that pretty typical for her?
Yes and no. But yeah.
That's a fair representation, huh?
That was the big song from it. I think it's probably the most catchy, but yeah.
Not unpleasant.
So on a scale of 1 to 100, Don says, well, it wasn't unpleasant.
I'd give it a 1 to 100, I'll give it a 47.
Whoa.
Wow.
See, this
hey,
is
Don, that's unpleasant.
Top shelf of unpleasant.
You know what, though? I respect it, even though I completely disagree. But at least he didn't say, oh, it's pretty good, 90.
Okay. I'm going to make a defense.
I had that in thought. That's why I did it.
But let's just pick up on a conversation.
But 47 seems harsh for the tone. I'm tone policing everybody. Your tone must match the score, otherwise I'll call you on it.
Oh, gosh. All
right. I was expecting like a 60, but 47 is close enough.
Yeah, which is it? Is it not unpleasant, or is it a 47?
I'll say it's a 47.
It's
actually
a 47.
This is my problem. I can only rate the music I'm hearing right now. I can't rate the music that I heard coming into this.
What do you mean by that? You mean the bed music
yeah.
you're listening to?
Yeah, exactly. I like this. Or I did.
Well, that's hurtful, because that's just, you know.
I feel like we're done with the vibe score segment now.
Silly bed music.
No, I like the bed music. That's that
you
gets...
like that more than the song that Griffin featured, is the point.
Yeah, it just takes the place in my memory. Like, yeah. I can't hang on to the tune once
I hear
that.
Griffin should reintroduce the music to us, if you can, Griffin. Then we'll maybe just kind of get our mindset again. Hey, Joe, where are you on that song, 1 to 100?
I was a little indifferent on it. I'll give it a 70. I did think it was catchy. I can't picture what kind of thing or atmosphere or feeling I would be doing, be in, while listening to that song.
Yeah, I know.
It's
what
not a workout
go,
song.
What
it's
makes
not,
you, oh, good. I'll put on Mitski and listen to the Cowboy song.
Cowboy.
The album's called Be the Cowboy. The song is called Nobody.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I give it a 90. 92, yeah. 93. I love it.
Yeah. Well, your tone matched your score, Griffin, so good on you. For
I
that.
Love it. I love it.
You know, I was having a conversation with a friend after last week's show, because where I said I didn't like something very much, I then gave it an 87, and Griff said the tone should match the score. To me, an 82, say, is a C. 82 is not a very good score. In my world, 100 to a 94 was an A, or 92. A 92 to an 85 was a B. Below an 85 was a C. So to me, an 84 is a very middling score. Whereas you might think a 50 should be. To me, a 50 is a complete failure. That's my
okay,
world.
So then what's a 10?
It would be
also a complete failure. So you've got
abysmal.
40 useless points in between there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. But
like, it just is even a crazier failure. But you're almost never going to get there if you think that a 50 is a failure.
And welcome to our education scoring system.
Yeah, welcome to a high school in America. Yeah. Welcome to ninth
grade. Is this
grade.
The path we wanted to take?
Yes. Why don't we just make it 1 to 50? Just eliminate those
just
first
do,
40 points.
Or just do letter grades, because if that's how you're using it.
Those are too broad-based. I think
I don't know.
The numbers...
Pretty soon we're just going to be giving thumbs up or thumbs down.
I know, which is the exact opposite of what this is about.
Oh, I love the fact that this segment now is just, we don't talk about the things, actually. We talk about the scoring.
Score.
Mm-hmm.
Every week we kind of update it just incrementally. I convince you a tiny bit more.
We've got your point, Griff. I think it's well made. Joe, what's a recommendation for you at the end of the Mincing Rascals podcast? We all threw out recommendations. What's your recommendation for the week?
All right, how about this? Everyone's kind of lost with what they should do. A lot of people have time off work during this hiatus in between Christmas and the New Year. One thing, and this really doesn't oppose to Griff because he's just the movie connoisseur, but there's always those movies that people talk about that you haven't seen, and they say, oh, you have to see it. Oh, how have you never seen that movie? Use this time to watch those movies.
Oh.
You know, there's a lot of downtime. We're graced with Netflix and Hulu and everything you possibly imagine. I watched a movie, My Girl, the other day. I had never seen it. I was like, you know what? What the heck? I had never seen it. I'm sure there's something I'm missing out on, and boy, I'm glad I watched that movie.
Was that the Macaulay Culkin?
He kicks the hornet's nest, right?
Yeah, throws rocks at it.
Brutal. That's a brutal end of that
movie.
It's
a very sad movie.
Hey, I didn't say watch a funny movie. I didn't say...
But you enjoyed it. You liked it?
I did, yeah. And now, I mean, it's definitely something I felt like I had missed out on. And, yeah, now I've seen that movie. I feel wiser for it.
I feel about 8th grade. 8th grade's on Barack Obama's list this year. And I haven't seen 8th grade. And I really feel like I missed an important movie this year. I was thinking that very thought, Joe. I've got to make an effort to go back and watch 8th grade.
Barack Obama's seen more than everybody. Where does he get the time?
I know. You know, and he had this list.
His list was infuriating. I was like, I've seen half of these.
And I'm not an ex-president.
I know. I've got less to do than him.
He just does everything committed, man.
Very frustrating.
That's the thing. It must be very hard to be married to him or his kid, you know, because nothing half-assed with Barack Obama, right? He's reading books. He's listening to music you don't know, rating it. His list of movies, by the way, Annihilation, Black... These are the ones he recommends. Annihilation, Black Panther, Black Klansman, Blindspotting, Burning, Death of Stalin, 8th grade, If Beale Street Could Talk, Leave No Trace, Minding the Gap, The Rider, Roma, Shoplifters, Support the Girls, and Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Wow. Mm. That is lengthy.
And those are the ones he liked. I mean...
What is he, like a member of SAG or something? Are they just sending him these DVD copies that
I bet he gets screeners.
Yeah, he probably does.
He can probably swing that.
Yeah.
Is Won't You Be My Neighbor the documentary or the one with Tom Hanks?
The documentary.
Okay.
Nice.
The Tom Hanks movie is not I don't know when that's coming out.
Okay, that's why I watched Won't You Be My Neighbor on the plane a couple weeks ago, and I was like, where is Tom Hanks?
When's he coming into this thing?
Do you like the movie, Joe?
You know what? I watched about 20 minutes, and then it just shut off on me, and I couldn't get back onto it. But I did enjoy what I saw, yeah.
Dom, what's your recommendation this week?
I will say, I do like those. I think it is good to use some time to watch some movies, and there's plenty on Netflix. I've been reading, just finished it. There's if you like fantasy novels, there's a great series, The Kingkiller Chronicle by Patrick Rothfuss. The first book's The Name of the Wind, and the second's The Wise Man's Fear, waiting for the third book to come out yet. But Patrick Rothfuss, like, just jumped into that's his first ever novel, is The Name of the Wind. And it came out with such a bang that, like, George R.R. Martin, the author of Game of Thrones, immediately hailed Rothfuss as, like, you know, the next coming of himself, basically. He's, like, this great, you know, great new fantasy author. And if you're into that stuff, like Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or something, The Kingkiller Chronicle, Name of the Wind, and Wise Man's Fear are some great books to read. They're both pretty lengthy, too, so around now would be a sweet time to get into them.
Hmm. Nice, nice, nice.
If he is the new George R.R. Martin, then I wouldn't count on that third book anytime.
Fair point. I'll be waiting until I'm dead, basically.
Well, the book I'm recommending, my recommendation this week, is Small Fry, Lisa Brennan Jobs' book. It's a memoir. She is Steve Jobs' daughter, and she writes about what it's like to be in that world, right?
Ooh.
I was about to say house, but they weren't a nuclear family at any point, really. And it's just gripping. It's just so interesting. I mean, imagine what it would be like to be his daughter. And he was such a mean-spirited guy at times. And some of the passages are just crushing. She's now a young woman. She's a good writer. And her memoir is hailed as one of the best memoirs of the year. And so far, I'm recommending it. I haven't read a lot of it, but I've read about it, and now I'm into the book, and I'm going to plow. Here's how much I wanted to read this book. I paid cash for this, gentlemen. I get free books here at WGN Radio when we review them. I paid cash for this one. Actually, went into a bookstore, and they almost didn't open the drawer. They didn't know what was about to happen. I said, no, I'm giving you money. You're giving me the book. Okay, fine. It was a novel experience for me. The book is called Small Fry. Griff, what's your recommendation this week?
I'll say, if you don't want to watch the whole movie, I watched Meet Me in St. Louis on Christmas, the Judy Garland musical. It's the first time that Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was ever performed in that movie. That's what that song is from.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a Christmas movie, so I watched it around Christmas. And I loved it. But I especially loved, you can just go to YouTube right now, 4 minutes, look up the trolley song from Meet Me in St. Louis, and you can watch it there.
Clang, 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 went the trolley.
I was so into it.
Really?
I've been listening to it all week.
So you made fun of, at the beginning of today's show,
go check out Rent. Have
you seen
that?
Seasons of Love.
Oh, that corny musical you were talking about earlier today.
I don't think Rent's ever been called corny. It's been called a lot of things and deserves some of them. Maybe corny is in that list. But, okay, Griff, clang, clang, clang.
It was just bringing joy.
Yeah.
It brought me joy.
That's what I'm trying to do here, a little bit of that. 11:51, this is WGN Radio. A couple of things to look forward to if you're watching sports this weekend. Here it is, Saturday. Does it feel like Saturday? You've got two really big bowl games today. Then you've got the Northwestern game on the 31st. And a couple of things to watch for, plus a couple of other items on the former president's list in a minute. Amy Guth is in Studio A getting ready for her show this afternoon. What are you going to be doing today?
Well, I'm going to be talking about, there's this New York Times story about for-profit cosmetology schools, and that's not a topic we talk about a lot on the business lunch, but nonetheless, it is a really fascinating one because it really kind of sells this lifestyle and this idea of this career ahead, and often people end up with a lot of debt in a low-paying job. So we're going to start off by talking about that, and then, of course, we're going to take a look at some holiday numbers to kind of look at post-holiday shopping, what that looks like. A lot of people tend to believe that's a time for big sales, but is that maybe different this year? Possibly.
I've heard of acquiring debt for going to college, but yes. People graduate cosmetology school with big debt sometimes?
Yeah, yeah. Like tens of thousands of dollars, you know, with this idea of this is a special school and I will learn this special technique, things like that. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Okay.
And, so then we're just going to look at some holiday and New Year numbers, as we do on this show.
I want to do a shout out. Thank you to Don and Joe for helping me out today. Bob, the engineer, and Griffin Filipich, our producer, who works with you too. So have a good show.